Hang on. The sun's up, and it's not Friday.
It's early. Damn early.
Must mean that you're on Community Radio 3CR for Saturday Kick-Ons with Jacob and Mercedes.
Hi there.
Oh, the pillars of society cruise down the road each day. They got the economic wherewithal we can't afford to pay.
If Friday night's rave wasn't enough for you, we've got an hour-long summer special where you can listen to us for the next hour from 9 till 10 a.m.
There's a hierarchy of dominance with a power at the top. And if you think you found the magic key, you find they changed the locks. Them pillars of society drive us like a tool. For them, that's cool.
So if you're a regular Asia Pacific Currents listener, you know who we are. Stay tuned. All right, geez. Saturday morning, you're right, this is a different world for you and I, sister.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is.
Whoa, okay, it was really lovely though, walking into the studio and hearing Captain Matchbox Whoopee Band.
Oh.
I can't dance, got edge in my pants.
I think I got that record from an old mate ages ago.
Right, it's an oldie but a goodie. You're with me, Jacob, and...
me, Mercedes.
On Friday Rave Saturday Kick-On. We normally do a Friday rave at 5 o'clock on Fridays, so but we've been asked, we thought we'd go with a longer format for the summer break, just see how we can handle being in the studio with each other for an hour and seeing how you can handle listening to us rabbit on for an hour. But if you're interested in the kind of things we're talking about, remember to tune in at 5 o'clock on Fridays.
And, of course, it's 3CR summer programming, so you're tuned to Community Radio 3CR. You might be at 855 or listening online at 3cr.org.au or listening back 3CR Digital or by podcasts. And Saturday Kick-Ons will all be podcasted on the Friday Rave page on 3CR's website. But while Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remember take a break over the summer, you've got us for the next hour, for the next few weeks.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know... Giselle from Asia Pacific Current and NASA from Palestine Remember. I hope, well, I know you're not enjoying your break with all the shit that's going on in the world, but I hope you're getting ready to come back refreshed.
Absolutely. And I think we should just mention we had our first episode of Saturday Kick-Ons last Saturday.
Last week.
And you can go back and listen to that, where we had a chat with Scott Ludlam about the far-reaching Atlas Network.
Yeah. And I might mention them in a bit, might mention something that, about them in a bit. But look, let's get into it. In the wake of the Bondi shootings, federal and state governments, the establishment media, sometimes called a legacy media, and a raft of, let's call them respectable insiders, have sought to find a scapegoat for the horrendous attack. And obviously... the real criminals are father and son team, Sajid and Naveed Akram. And while everybody acknowledges this, there also seems to be a consensus among the powers that be that the ongoing pro-Palestine peace protests created the climate of anti-Semitism that somehow facilitated the attack. Peace activists. Now, we don't feel the need to point out to 3CR listeners that this idea would be stupid if it did not have very serious repercussions. But there are a couple of points we want to make to start off with. And firstly, and this is an important one, while the ongoing protests were not ever anti-Semitic in nature, you know that, it has been in the interest of the Israel lobby to paint them as such. This happened from the start, but the first protest in Sydney on the 10th of October 2023, the allegations that the protesters were chanting things like "gas the Jews," and this was later found out to be total bullshit. But of course, the news that this was all rot that came out weeks later did not have the media sexiness, let's call it, of anarchists and Arabs yelling out "gas the Jews." So it didn't get the fact that it was rubbish never got reported on. This is often the case in the media, isn't it? They say something, makes the front page, the headlines, whatever, and then 2 weeks later is, oh, yeah, apparently that was wrong, and that's all you get.
And this has been characteristic of forever, but especially over the last 2 years, you know, the false and lies about beheaded babies and on October 7 and all of these things
exactly.
that get all of the news and the media attention at the time. But when they're found to be false, which they always are, and found to be Hasbara, it just doesn't even cop a mention.
That's right. You know, it's not just made up on the spot. This is a program. You know, as you said, last week we spoke to Scott about the right-wing think tanks and, pushed government policy and things in the media. Sorry about that. It's my phone going off. But last year on a Friday rave, it was last year, we spoke about the Heritage Foundation's Project Esther that outlined exactly this tactic of painting any support for Palestine or opposition to genocide as anti-Semitic hate speech in order to alienate and ultimately destroy the pro-Palestine movement. This is what they were calling for, exactly what you've seen them doing.
And you know, like linking the Bondi attacks with the anti-Israel movement was a top of Min's agenda.
Absolutely.
After that happened, you know, he jumped to evoke the term globalize the intifada as hate speech.
Yeah.
Like the same way in attempting to falsify the narrative about the October 2023 protests that was found to be false,
yeah.
You know, and falling back on these vague assertions.
Globalize the intifada is not hate speech. Globalized resistance is something the left have been calling for, well, since we were the left.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a big argument, I guess, that can be made that this conflating the peace movement with hate speech did, in fact, help create the climate which may have encouraged the Akrams. You know, they could have, in their murder spree, who knows?
Or given them cover. Yeah.
But it was not, and it is not, the peace movement that conflates opposition to the State of Israel with opposition to the religion of Judaism or indeed to Jewish people. That is the Israel lobby and the government, media and police. And when they made that false correlation to further their own interests, they weren't just describing what they said as a problem, but they were creating the problem. You have now a whole lot of people who believe the peace movement is anti-Semitic because of things coming out of the mouths of people like Anthony Albanese, Tony Burke, Chris Minns, and let's face it, Luke Ilicari. It's absolutely ridiculous conflating the peace movement with the attacks on Bondi. But the other thing, and this is an important thing, and I don't think it's been said, but I'm going to say it now. And I want to point out that the Akrams took control of the footbridge at the Bondi parking lot. And we wondered on the first Friday rave after the shootings how that obvious high space was left unprotected by the coppers and by the community support group, who were apparently in attendance. It was the obvious point for any kind of anti-Israel protest to take place. And it would not have surprised, or it should not have surprised, any one of us if some peace activists, noting all the Israeli flags in the promotion of the event on the posters and everything, did, ill-advisedly you could say, but if they did decide to stage a peaceful protest by unfurling a banner or a flag from the obvious location of that very footbridge, it wouldn't have surprised us. And in hindsight, perhaps they should have. Perhaps they should have held a protest there. Maybe it would have slowed the attack down somewhat. If for no other reason, and this is important, that having a couple of dozen Palestine supporters at a peaceful protest with a Palestinian flag and a banner saying stop the genocide would have ensured, without a shadow of doubt, the presence of dozens of police with long arms, riot gear, drones, street searchers and armoured vehicles, and those Akram shitheads wouldn't have been able to get within cooee of the gig.
Yep.
That's all you need to do if you want to protect events like that, mate. Call a peace protest because the police will be there in droves. But here's the rub. There was no pro-Palestine or anti-genocide protests there, because the peace movement, unlike the Israel lobby, understands the fundamental concepts of the separation of religion and people on the one hand and the actions of a state on the other. We always have. In fact, the separation of church and state is the foundation of what makes us left. So we actually welcome the move, the recent move by the government. Albanese announced a couple of weeks ago is going to launch an independent Commonwealth review into Australia's federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies. That's the actual title of it. We actually welcome that move, or we would, if we had any reason to believe that it was going to be anything other than an arse-covering exercise that won't be public or transparent and will only result in more money being spent, greater powers given to cops and spooks, and the further creation of labyrinthine and draconian laws that will inevitably be used not against actual terrorists like the ACRAMs. There are already laws in place that would have been able to stop them if they had been used. But inevitably, any new laws and any new measures will be used against the peace movement, the pro-Palestine movement, and those dangerous radicals in our society that are trying to stop genocides, end our reliance on the weapons industry, and, of course, stop environmentally destructive resource exploitation, and maybe even, in our wildest dreams, manage to do something real about facing the existential threat of climate change. That's who any new laws or measures will be used against, us, the people, because that is who the laws are being used against now and who they have always been used against. And let's face reality. Australian governments and their federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies are not there to protect Australian society. Get that in your heads. They are there to protect the financial interests of the Australian ruling class. The very people, weapons manufacturers, financial speculators, resource extractors, energy producers, the very people benefiting from genocide and ecocide that the peace and environment movements are trying to stop. You know, granted, they need to maintain a certain amount of social order in order to facilitate the sort of society that allows their principal aim, the accumulation of more and more of the world's wealth, into fewer and fewer hands. They need to allow that to not only continue, but to speed up the rate of this unholy accumulation of wealth. Where, you know, I mean, geez, even when I started doing the occasional show on 3CR 10 years ago, we were talking about 90% of the 50% of the world's people owning more than 90% of the wealth. Now we're talking about less than 0.5% of the world's people owning, God knows, more than half.
And the first trillionaire about to be announced.
The first trillionaire, yeah. But that's their objective. The accumulation of wealth.
And I think that, you know, I mean, we're going to be talking more about the intelligence agencies, but that accumulation of more and more wealth into fewer and fewer hands. And so when we're talking about the national intelligence community, its roles, its functions and its history, and as we're going to have this discussion, the power and lobbies in creating the political climate, the intelligence community wouldn't be able to undertake its activities, its collection of data, surveillance, anything like that, without the products necessary to do so.
Exactly.
And so we've spoken at length about companies like Palantir, its global footprint. And so
Albert.
And so we were talking about, like, security intelligence market forecasts are no different to that in terms of the implementation of these laws that we're going to see really benefit these companies, because the products that they market are required, and this is being forecast.
That's right. And not only directly benefit them by buying more and more and more and more of their products, but their products are used to enable them to sell more and more and more and more of their products. You know, and these laws are there to make sure that this can continue. They're not there to protect the Australian people or, as I say, the very biosphere we depend on. There's very much secondary considerations. They are the socially acceptable sales pitch for a very anti-social agenda. And the sooner we all understand this, the better.
as a society. Cruise down the road each day. They got the economic wherewithal we can't afford to pay. They got them numbered bank accounts. The system assures they win. They exploit the population. We're on the outside looking in. Them pillars of society. Drivers like a tool. For them that's cool. They drive Mercedes, Benz and Porsches, live Rolls-Royce gilt-edged lives. You can tell the affluent from the status symbols that they drive. When you're on the dole queue, they'll tell you to your face, you're a blood, you're on their system, and a blight in the human race. Them pillars of society, drive us like a tool, for them that's cool. Well, they grace the social pages, they always make the news. At the church on Sunday, the crowd in the front pews. There's a hierarchy of dominance with a power at the top. And if you think you found the magic key, you find they changed the locks. Them pillars of society drive us like a tool, for them that's cool. Walking down the freeway on their dotted line. I'd like to make decisions, but they won't allow the time. It says religion is the opium. I say the media's the cocaine. 24 hours of propaganda, drugging my poor brain. Them pillars of society drive us like a tool, for them that's cool. Titles of status and dominance on their progeny and their class. Sir, your honor, your grace, your highness were made to polish and lick their brass. But you, my friend, can be like them if you have their $1 million feed. But you find the system designed to keep us in line and walk in on our knees. Them pillars of society drive us like a tool, for them that's cool.
That's right, you're tuned to Community Radio 3CR with I'm Mercedes and I'm here with Jacob.
Hey.
On Saturday Kick-Ons, the summer program. Friday Rave, Saturday Kick-Ons, the summer program.
Yeah, and as I say, we're normally on a Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, so tune in then to hear more of the same stuff we're rabbiting on about. But, look, let me see, what am I going to... Let's talk about this Bondi... announcement that Albanese made last month, I can say now.
Last year,
in fact.
That's right. It's significantly after new legislation was brought in New South Wales, rushed through. So this review has been announced, the Richardson Review has been announced after legislation had already passed in terms of gun reform and the banning of public assembly and protests.
Absolutely outrageous. But... you know, having all put things together, I want to have a deeper look into this Independent Commonwealth Review into Australia's federal law enforcement intelligence agencies. You know, last week, 21st December, the Prime Minister announced that Dennis Richardson would be undertaking a review into basically whether the intelligence agencies failed in relation to Bondi. Spoiler alert, yes. But the terms of reference are quite brief and can be divided into two parts, and I'm going to go through them. The first four terms, or points or terms I'd call them, are who knew what and how they communicated and made decisions and whether there were any additional matters available that they could have used but didn't. And those terms are What relevant Commonwealth agencies knew about the alleged offenders before the attack and when? The interaction information sharing between the Commonwealth agencies and between Commonwealth and state and territory agencies. What judgments were made and actions taken by the relevant agencies? And whether there were any additional measures that relevant Commonwealth agencies could have taken to prevent the terrorist attack. In other words, what went wrong? Because, look, not even Albanese, not even, oh God, what's his name? What's his name? That gormless wonder who's Minister for Defence?
Oh, Richard Marx.
He's still Minister for Defence?
He's not climbed the ladder yet.
Oh, good Lord. Or been sacked. and what's his name? Mike Burgess from ASIO. Even those people would have to admit that it was a failure. All right? So you have to make some concessions. So far, so good. The remaining 5 points of the nine, though, could almost be read as a single question. And those remaining 5 points are, five terms are, whether relevant Commonwealth agencies were prevented from taking prohibitive actions by the current legislative framework and authorising environment. In other words, were your hands tied too much?
Do you need more legislative freedom to do whatever you want?
Did the laws stymie you? Next one, what additional measures, if any, should be taken by relevant Commonwealth agencies to prevent similar attacks occurring in the future? What do you want to do? The next one, whether they have adequate legislative powers, the right systems, processes and procedures, and an appropriate authorising environment for information sharing with other federal, state and territory agencies. Again, are there too many laws? Is the authorising environment for information sharing too stringent? Is the situation that you fail to see this, that you let a known ISIS supporter legally own 6 guns, travel to Davos in the Philippines and come back and shoot people at an unguarded and unmarked Jewish community event, even though you were told that something bad could go off there, all right? Is that because there were too many laws restricting you and you weren't able to authorise things?
And what, I guess, what jumps out to me about that particular point is that, again, the mechanisms that are required for that information sharing and the technology required to do so.
Yeah.
You know, so what, not just, we're going to speak a little bit more about it, but the legislative frameworks are already pretty broad and open without oversight or accountability.
Absolutely.
And so if that is the findings of the review, and not just that was it a monumental stuff-up.
Yeah, that they need more powers and greater latitude. And then the next point, next term, whether warrant and data access regimes and powers are adequate, do you need more powers? And the final one, whether any legislative amendments are required. Because in other words, they're saying, tell us what you need, because, brother, nothing's off the table.
Nothing's off the table. And also the terms of reference, you know, as it's very specified in relation to Bondi, not to the review of the intelligence organisations as a whole and what processes were in place that led to this monumental stuff up,
yeah,
which is clearly not just in relation to this, but there's got to, you know, there's systematic.
Yeah. And Albanese himself, in announcing he was doing this, said specifically focusing on ASIO and the federal police, I think he said, did he? From memory. Where he's not mentioning the ONI.
No.
Who are the people who should have been telling him. Maybe he doesn't want to include them in the review because they'll turn around and say, we told a bugger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And also because they're the ones that are tasked with overseeing the whole intelligence framework in Australia.
Yeah. And anyway, but the other question we need to ask about this is, who are they asking these questions of? Dennis Richardson, a Mandarin or a former Mandarin, is retired now, although you wouldn't think so because he keeps popping his head up to undertake these reviews.
Quite soon after he finished.
He's a former diplomat who went on to be Bob Hawke's chief of staff. Now, I'd say quite soon after he finished, as soon as he finished being Bob Hawke's chief of staff, he then undertook a review of the Australian intelligence community post-Cold War in 1993. So back in 1993, he did that review into the Australian intelligence community. And then he was appointed Director General of Security, otherwise known as the head of ASIO.
So he wrote the review, did the report, and said, here's all the things that are wrong with it. Oh, I know the perfect guy for the job.
I know the guy for the job. And look, he was there for, I think it was about 9 years, head of ASIO. Again, about 9 years. I haven't got that written in front of me. But, and I read somewhere, I think it might have been on Michael West Media, that Dennis Richardson had fronted 50 Senate Estimates Committee in his career and seems to have not answered a single question.
Yes, yeah. I think it was an article by Rex Patrick.
Rex Patrick.
On Michael West Media.
Right.
He said he was known to do well at skirting around the questions and never really answering anything.
Which is obviously why he's such a good head of ASIO. But
yeah.
Anyway, after he was ASIO, Howard appointed him ambassador to the United States.
And so what year was that?
Would have been, round about 90. I can
probably look that up too.
Can you look that up? Yeah. I've got an arm in plaster, folks, and so Mercedes' hands are more agile in operating a keyboard than mine are at the moment. Yeah, he went to be ambassador to the United States and he was replaced by Kim Beazley later on. And Kim Beazley was known, of course, as the best Australian ambassador America ever had, but I don't reckon Dennis Richardson would have been far behind him.
From 2005 to 2010.
2005 to 10, yeah. He came back to Australia in 2010. And he took on the positions of Secretary of Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade for a couple of years, and then Secretary of Department of Defence for 5 years from 2012 until he retired, well, quote-unquote retired, in 2017.
And so he's pretty much done the whole rounds of most of the agencies within that fall under the Office of National Intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Ambassador to the US, someone who did the initial review post-Cold War into Australian intelligence community and who was head of ASIO, you can understand where his focus was as ambassador to the United States. And, of course, this is from 2005 to 2010. Quite intense years in international, in wars.
In wars.
Let's face it, yeah. Okay, so where are we? 2017, when he retired, he overtook another review, the Australian government's comprehensive review of Australian intelligence legislation. This is the bloke who made the recommendations for what the laws should be. He did the review of what we should be doing post-Cold War, then he was head of ASIO, then he went to the US to be America's stooge to the Australian government, not the other way around. Then he come back to Australia, heads up Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and Department of Defence, then retires and writes the Australian government's comprehensive review of Australian intelligence legislation. Yeah. By whatever criteria you look at, Dennis Richardson is anything but independent.
Absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit on this comprehensive review of
framework. Go for it. Hang on. Before you do, though, just one last thing on Dennis Richardson before I leave the poor bloke alone. In December 2024, he was appointed to look at how the Australian Submarine Agency was faring as far as our commitment to AUKUS was going. You know, it seems like he may have found a new career trajectory, undertaken reviews into areas of defence and security that the government has buggered up, but all be that as it may, his findings on that inquiry could be summed up in three words: full steam ahead.
Despite us not actually having the report.
Absolutely.
Or seeing it.
No.
Whether we will.
But just the reporting on it in the defence journals.
Yes.
He actually went as far as castigating former, and this is how we know, because he castigated former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull in a public speech for raising doubts about AUKUS's viability. All right, so what do you reckon Dennis Richardson's going to find? You know, I mean, I can tell you now. But anyway, you wanted to talk about that review.
Yeah, so in 2017, the intelligence review came out, and this was like the formation of, or the shift from the Office of National Assessments
yep.
to the Office of National Intelligence.
Yep.
Under Turnbull. And so basically the comprehensive review of the legal framework of the national intelligence community, which was undertaken in 2017 by Dennis Richardson, was kind of looking at the legal frameworks that would help the role of ONI undertake its duties in being the overseer, I guess, of the national intelligence community.
Yeah.
And so doing a little bit of, and I guess wanting to contextualise this report in with the current one of how this was done. So the methodology of this review does highlight why we can expect to see much of the same from the impending Richardson review, presumably.
Yeah.
The submissions to that review weren't made public. The consultation process overwhelmingly involved engagement with intelligence agencies, defence, foreign relations and intelligence agencies in mm-hmm. what could really only be described as English-speaking allies, except maybe with the exception of Netherlands and France.
Right, okay. But generally the Five Eyes.
Generally the Five Eyes. And there was little to next to no engagement with academic or legal expertise outside of the national security establishment. And where it did exist, it was very, very selective. So it was the independent review was made submissions and was really only selective within of people within the intelligence community.
So it'd be like you and I doing an independent review into the operations of 3CR.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And so it is undertaken by an insider. And without adequate access in terms of a human rights framework in Australia, and this has been raised of what is, you know, been really problematic about this review, particularly in a legal sense, is that the policy shifts and the curtailing of rights that happen as a result of that are always on the back burner or not even on the burner at all. This creation of rushed and overlapping laws and frameworks really undermine any attempts at actual accountability in circumstances that the impending review is allegedly trying to review. So there's such an overlapping sense of legislation.
Yeah.
And so I guess the pattern that has been established since this 2017 review into intelligence agencies is not just one of secrecy, but also the short time frames or is what I would read politically expedient, right, yep. as we've been talking about. So yep. So the review of changes and implementation of changes has taken place in a really short and quick time frame in terms of, so the first tranche of the recommendations will push through just prior to the end of the year closure of Parliament and just before an upcoming election by the Morrison government. And so it was actually just over a year from when Richardson handed down the report.
The 2017 review.
The 2017 review. That a redacted copy was released publicly, and it was another year before amendments were tabled in 2022 that only had a month of review. A month from the only body that is legislated to oversee the national intelligence community, which is the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security.
Right.
So they had a month to review the changes. There were two submissions in that review period, both of which are classified. And I just got to say, so it's legislated that the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security is the parliamentary oversight body of this. And I think it was in 2014, the practice of excluding Senate Legal and Constitutional Affairs committees from the National Security Law Reviews was implemented.
Yeah.
And so
less oversight. Nothing to see here. Look the other way, folks.
Yeah, and I'd encourage listeners to just jump on their website and have a look at who's in the committee. Who's in the committee? You know, we've got people like, let me just have a quick look at who's in the committee as it stands at the moment. We have Michaela Cash is there. bunch of Labour pollies. Oh, my internet's not working. There we go. It's Raph Saccone.
Raph Saccone, yep.
Michaela Cash, Jonathan Dunham. Who else is there? Jump online and have a look. Angus Taylor. Oh. Yep. And so jump online and have a little look at what that committee is. But also just bearing in mind that the Senate and Legal and Constitutional Affairs Committee is actually not allowed to undertake
yeah.
national law reviews. Yeah. So
the people we elect to make the laws and make the decisions about what our country does are not allowed to know what's going on.
Not allowed to know what's going on. And so the first tranche of recommendations that were rushed through Parliament after that month-long oversight by the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security, they made one minor amendment before recommending passing the legislation. And so what that recommendation, this tranche reflects, is trust, reliance upon, and deference to intelligence expertise.
Yep.
And so the pattern followed again in 2023.
It's like putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. And so the pattern followed again in 2023. But I just want to say that it does evoke, I've been reading about the NSA and the Congress reports on their questioning of intelligence after the Snowden leaks and the NSA. And they were kind of saying that these were really people who were invested in the National Security Agency in the US. And instead of actually asking questions about the undertakings of the NSA in the US, it was more just long rambling pontifications about the importance that of having such a thing yeah. in place in the way it was. And yeah. so again in 2023...
Not that I should object to long rambling pontifications.
Nor should I, by the sound of this little rave. But so the limited time frame in 2023, when there was another raft of recommendations that were being tabled, there was little critique or review outside the intelligence community. There was a single public hearing on Easter Monday. And so
Easter Monday.
Yeah. So the changes so far in the implementation of Richardson's 2017 report represent their loosening of mechanisms of accountability of intelligence agencies, an easing of checks and balances in the authorization of surveillance and collection methods, and increased intelligence on the activity of Australian people. And so it also resulted in the increased integration between ASIS and ASIO, formerly considered the former considered overseas,
yep.
and of course the latter being
domestic.
Yeah. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But I guess what the 2017 review really wanted to try and do was to develop a legislative framework for the Office of National Intelligence mm-hmm. to undertake its activity as this overarching umbrella.
That's right. And look, the organisations within when we talk about. You hear the terms interchangeably. Well, they're not interchangeable, but sometimes we hear the National Intelligence Community and sometimes we hear the Australian Intelligence Community. Now, when we hear those things, generally we think of ASIO and ASIS
mm-hmm.
and perhaps the ASD, Australian Signals Directorate, but it's bigger than that. And, you know, you were talking about, I used the term labyrinthine earlier, and you were talking about the way these laws seem almost designed to obfuscate and make things impossible.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. I mean, that's where the term Byzantine comes from. But anyway, the National Intelligence Community consists of the six agencies of the Australian Intelligence Community plus three agencies of the Department of Home Affairs, which is Border Force and the like, and the Transactions Board and the Criminal Investigations, and the Australian Federal Police. Now, we're going to focus for a bit on the Australian Intelligence Community, and their main ones are, you mentioned yourself, the Office of National Intelligence. It used to be the ONI, used to be known as the ONA, the Office of National Assessments, and it's a statutory body within the Prime Minister's portfolio, and it's the nearest thing we have to a peak body, as you put it. They oversee. They don't. The other agencies don't answer to the ONI, but it's seen as the lead agency, and the NIC coordinates their activities. And the way the 2024 review into intelligence, because this happened all the time, folks, the way the 2024 review into intelligence described it was enterprise management.
Enterprise management.
Enterprise management.
Yeah, right.
So it's an enterprise.
It's an enterprise. Yeah, that's exactly right.
The business of spying. DO&I is responsible for providing not only governments with intelligence assessments, but confidential information directly to the Prime Minister and other senior cabinet ministers, particularly ministers of the Security Committee. Mm-hmm. Now, people might not be aware too much of the ONA or the ONI, but those of a certain age may remember the Gulf War in 2003 or 2003 invasion of Iraq, let's call it, not the Gulf War, under the Howard government, when Andrew Wilkie first came to prominence. Andrew Wilkie is now the member for Denison. No, it's changed its name. Clark. In Tasmania, but he first came to prominence when he was a an analyst with the ONA, and he blew the whistle and resigned from the ONA because he feared the humanitarian consequences of invasion.
Mm.
And back in the day, I was part of the Victorian Peace Network. I think I was convener of it, in fact. But it was amazing that someone would come out. And so hats off to him. He's still doing good work. He was obviously one of Julian's biggest supporters. But this is about the ONA, about the Australian intelligence community, not about Andrew Wilkie. Then you've got ASIS,
mm-hmm.
that you said. There was the, you know, there's still the definition where ASIS is overseas and ASIO is domestic, but it's blurred.
Mm.
After that last review. And ASIS produces intelligence about overseas goings-on and actually intervenes in goings-ons. Their official remit is to support national intelligence priority. They were formed in 1954 but weren't publicly acknowledged as existing until 1977. And ASIS is part of Foreign Affairs and is a statutory agency, isn't it? What it does is it undertakes the government's dirty work.
Mm.
Most listeners would be aware of the stellar work they performed on our behalf in 2004, bugging the Timorese Prime Minister's office in order to find Timor-Leste's bottom line in the negotiations over oil and gas in the Timor Gap.
Mm.
So while we're talking about our friends, the Timorese, we're actually bugging their offices. You know, this reminds me. No, I won't go there. I've got another rabbit hole I can go down.
Bugging their offices is not, and you know, obviously overseas intelligence, ASIS works closely with the ASD.
Yeah.
And so it's not the first time that they've been. It was in WikiLeaks cables where there was bugging offices again in 2009 of the Indonesian.
That's the ASD.
That's the ASD, but we'll keep going with ASIS.
Stick with ASIS. And the other thing people might know about ASIS is that they ran the CIA's operation to get rid of Allende in 1973 from offices in San Diego.
Mm.
We spoke about this just a couple of months ago at the 50th anniversary of the Whitlam dismissal.
We did, and we also mentioned then that at their own behest, some of those ASIS, some of those spooks
stayed on. Against the direction of the Whitlam government. And when he found out this was going on, he pulled them out and they went, nah, we're staying. This is what ASIS is. And just recently, it's unusual, but the new head of ASIS, a woman by the name of Kerry Hartland, gave a speech in Canberra about the psychology and mechanics of Australian human intelligence operations. HUMINT, they call it. Mm. We talk about ASIS working closely with DSD. ASIS works to human intelligence. DSD works the signals intelligence. There's HUMINT and SIGINT. Right. Mm. And that's the main difference. And, you know, they've largely been allergic to publicity. That, as I said, they weren't even acknowledged to exist. But on the 30th of October, Kerry Hartland spoke about the fundamentals of how ASIS spies for Australia. and the recruitment of running foreigners with access to secrets Australia wants. She spoke about the spycraft. Now, that tells me that it's hardly going on anymore. But she also spoke about ASIS's role within the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. ASIS's existence makes Australia more similar to its US and UK partners than to New Zealand and Canada.
Mm.
All right. But anyway, so that goes on. And she, you know, she went on and rabbited on about the mythology, the technology. She's talking about a team sport. But she finally, you know, she's talking about the way they ran the human intelligence. She didn't mention, of course, Allende or Timor Leste. She set out a case, I'm reading a report here, for the continuing value of HUMINT to get the true actions and intentions of people and groups overseas. It still takes a human sitting down with another human. So this sounds to me like a bit of a budget war between ASIS
and the signals and the ASD.
You can tap all the phones you like, but we still need to sit down at the Better Cafe with this bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the SIGINT element, which is the Australian Signals Directorate, which was prior, what year did it change from the Defence Signals Directorate? Was it 2018?
No, it was before that.
It was before that,
yeah,
anyway.
It was early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, right. And so the ASD are the ones that, you know, help ASIS do the phone tapping.
Yes.
I guess. And so it was actually the Snowden leaks. I said it was WikiLeaks before, but the Snowden all leaks right. Exposed from the Australian Signals Directorate just how closely the Five Eyes, including Australia, works with companies like the National Security Agency for a global surveillance network.
Yes.
So in 2009, the Australian Signals Directorate, which was then the Defence Signals Directorate, tapped the phones of Indonesian President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono and his wife Annie and nine of his closest presidential confidants. And so Tony Abbott at the time was like, oh, it's just research. We're not spying. It's just for research. And so Indonesia, of course, weren't happier with that pretty flippant response.
Yeah.
And they recalled the ambassador. Indonesia recalled the ambassador from Canberra and reviewed the strategic relationship with Australia and Indonesia, and it suspended intelligence sharing and anti-people smuggling operations in Australia, which were the main remit of the Howard government's increased in counter-terrorism and Pacific Solution policy frameworks
exactly.
In his final term.
Exactly. And also the time, a big part of that was the time when Dennis Richardson was actually the head of ASIO through all the Tampa bullshit.
Yeah.
And all of that. But anyway, we're running out of time. You're listening to Community Radio 3CR with the Friday Rave Saturday kick on with me, Jacob.
And me, Mercedes. And
we're just going to run through a couple of the other agencies quickly.
Very quickly.
We won't go, but we can't not talk about ASIO.
Yeah, that's right. And so, as you said, Rachel Noble in 2021?
2021.
Yeah, highlighted that it was for, not verbatim, that we know exactly what they're doing because we do it too.
We do it too.
We do it too.
That's what she said. We'll stay with DSD. DSD is the agency, the primary agency within the Five Eyes Alliance.
Yeah.
That's the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. All right. And then there are other groupings as well, the Six Eyes, which includes, I think, Japan and the Seven Eyes, including Israel. And you know, but it's the Five Eyes is the white English-speaking club. All right. And it came out of the Second World War and the Britain-USA.
Yes.
Agreement, right? And they're the ones who analyse all the signals intelligence. They're the people who run, you know, they're the people who, unbeknownst to you, are just up in the greeny, leafy hills of between Watsonia and Heidelberg there, Greensboro, if you want to call it, analysing data that's coming from places like Pine Gap.
And I guess just very quickly on ASIO. Is that like what formulates that special relationship of that joint intelligence sharing between the US and Britain was that ASIO was formed as a domestic spy agency. Absolutely. In 1949.
Yep.
And the emergence of ASIO was to pretty much guarantee to the US and British governments that Australia's security standards were up to scratch. And this was following the US didn't want to tell Australian security agencies at the time, prior to 1949, but they actually had some leaks called the Venona leaks.
Yes.
Which indicated that there were leaks to the Soviet Union through Australian, through Australia.
Yeah.
And so the relationship was so distrusting that they didn't want to tell Australia that they had this information through the leaks and built cover story after cover story. At the same time, the US was giving missiles and weapons information to Britain, who yep. had a joint agreement for a rocket testing launch.
In Woomera.
And so basically Australia's security standards weren't up to scratch for the US and for Australia, mm-hmm. for Britain, rather.
Yeah.
And so they had to do something in order to say, oh, no, we'll have this good special relationship that you need us to have in 1949. And that is how ASIO was formed.
That's right.
To guarantee to the US and to Britain that Australia will keep their secrets just as well as they will. And now as part of the Five Eyes network, it hasn't really turned back.
Yeah. And that's what ASIO do. ASIO are the ones. I mean, look, there's been secret histories of ASIO. There have been official histories of ASIO.
I've been reading the official history of ASIO.
Oh,
and it's,
poor you.
Oh, it's so boring. But it's also, it's just like, come on, of course.
Yeah. But these are your classic spies. You know, when you look at the spy versus spy cartoons, the crows, you know, This is who we're talking about. You know, there's a new ASIO building in Canberra, the Chifley building, but before that they were there just on Russell Hill. And, you know, there were a system of lights that everybody in the movement, everybody in the industry knew in Canberra, a system of lights outside the ASIO building that were on, depending on whether this one was on or that one was off, meant stay away from the building if you're undercover or it's safe to come in. I mean, it was real. It was classic boys' own adventure spycraft stuff.
Well, and now they've got $700 million a year to do with what they will.
Yeah, yeah. And
they still can't get it right.
And they can't get it right. And meanwhile, you've got Mike Burgess. Now, this guy, Mike Burgess, we've spoken about him a few times in a Friday rave. But
and we will again, no doubt.
And we will again. But, yeah, it's unprecedented the way the director of security is there all the time. Whenever they're talking at elbow's shoulder, he's giving speeches, he's being feted by the legacy media. Mm. There's never, I mean, talk about hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
You can't get this bloke to keep his mouth shut.
He loves it.
He loves it. It's with what we're seeing here, we're not going to have time to go into the other agencies, but this is just to give you a brief introduction into what this review's about and also a brief introduction into what we do on a Friday rave, I guess. Regular Saturday morning listeners. But it's more importantly than all that, what we're seeing with the head of ASIS now giving public talks, Rachel Noble, when she was head of ASD in 2021, giving public lectures, Mike Burgess becoming a minor media celebrity. I'm almost expecting to see him on one of those game shows as a panellist, you know?
Overtaking Ron Burgess.
Exactly. What it is, it's the intrusion of the security defence apparatus into the quotidian life of Australians. Now, we saw this with the military under the Howard years, where all of a sudden laws and directives were changed from of personnel not to wear their uniforms when they're out in public to being encouraged to wear their uniforms while they're out in public.
The normalisation of it within the public sphere.
The normalisation of it. We're seeing the militarisation. I don't actually like using the term militarisation of police because they were always military.
Yes.
But people know what I mean. The riot gear, the body armour, the armoured vehicles. We're seeing it's all coming into our society. The Australian Defence Force now gives and has done, since the Howard years, an award in every high school for a future leader, a cash award. It's
the imperial boomerang.
It's that's, yeah,
you know, like this is what it is, and this is what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's the intrusion of the we've seen the intrusion of the military into popular life. And now we're seeing the intrusion of the intelligence community into popular life. And it's sickening.
It is sickening. But we are just about out of time. So we'll be back next Saturday.
Next Saturday. And we'll be back next Friday.
We'll be back next Friday before that. But be sure to check out some of the summer specials and stay tuned.
Can I just put my hand up too? I'll be back tomorrow.
Oh, of course.
At midday. As part of rotations, playing some music and having a brief chat to Leon Russellson. So,
make sure to tune into that. That's midday tomorrow,
the
4th. But this has been Friday Raves, Saturday Kick-Ons. For another week, keep it locked for the Radioactive Show. You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR.